You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. I'll start with a non-wrestling death and a wrestling death. Attention must be paid. The great Alan Arkin dying earlier today at the age of 89.
Oh,
one of my favorites, because he's one of those guys. He trained at Second City in Chicago, and he was a comedic actor who then got to transition to dramatic roles, which is always the dream, I think, for a lot of people who do comedy. It was for me in many ways. Personal favorites of mine, I love After Dark, My Sweet. He is just absolutely fantastic as basically a hippie killer in that one. He is great. I'm partial to some of his supporting roles in things like, I love Indian Summer, which isn't the best movie in the world, but it's the kind of movie that appeals to my nostalgic sensibilities. Catch 22. He's awesome in the movie version of that.
Yeah. I was going to say that for years, my avatar on like Skype and older chat services and stuff was Alan Arkin as Yossarian giving the middle finger. And
yeah,
that's
some good stuff. A lot of people like Little Miss Sunshine. I never saw it. I know
he's really good award for it. Yeah, he's really good.
It's just too much. I mean, at that point, it was just too much of the indie-rific whimsy for me that I just didn't ever want to watch Little Miss Sunshine, but he was great in that. He's just one of those great drawl, whatever. I'll tell you what to go look up, which is amazing in some ways, is watch him on The Muppet Show, the early version. He's absolutely fantastic. And he's doing a bit throughout the entire thing where he's drank this concoction that has turned him to a monster. So he'll go from Jekyll to Hyde throughout the entire show. It's a fantastic bit. He's also wonderfully understated in the movie version of Glengarry Glen Ross, which also appeals to me because I once did Glengarry Glen Ross. And yeah, you know, he plays George Aaron now in that, who is basically kind of a weak schlub to the Moss character in that, who's played by Ed Harris in the film version. And of course, Argo. Do you see Argo?
I have not.
Okay. He steals Argo out from everybody in that with one line. And if you haven't heard the line, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it involves the, it also has the title of the film in the line. But yeah, he's a great actor. Go watch some Alan Arkin this weekend. Also, but it, transitioning over to wrestling news, earlier today, Darren Drozdoff, a.k.a. Droz, died at the age of 54. Former football player at the University of Maryland. That's where I actually knew of him from, because he was in the very first game that I was at the University of Virginia. We played Maryland in our opener that year. And Drozdoff was a linebacker on the other side, and he was just an absolute beast. Better known as Puke in the WWE, and made famous by, of course, that Beyond the Mat segment where he has a meeting with Vince and Shane, and they want him to puke on cue because he had gotten a lot of play, especially on ESPN and other sports things, where he would get so excited on the field. He had been a linebacker for, I believe, the Broncos for a couple years. I think he did a year in the CFL. But that he would puke because of, you know, the adrenaline and the nerves and all that stuff, and he would do that to calm down. But his big thing was he could puke on command. So, of course, in this segment, if you haven't seen Beyond the Mat, we released audio on it, too, during the pandemic. We did. Yeah, and that's one of our better shows, in my opinion. I mean, Chris, you know, finally got into gear and did something on it.
I don't always phone it in. That was at a point in time where I gave a crap. And
thanks, Chris.
And you know what? I commend myself for going through the motions every week.
90% of this podcast is showing up anyway.
It's showing up.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
Hey, come on now. It's your boy Novi. Let's not hate.
He was made one third of the Road Warriors, or he was made a new Road Warrior somewhere in there, which wasn't great. Of course, career ended prematurely after a power bomb from D'Lo Brown, which affected both his careers. But I mean, he is paralyzed from the neck down. He needed 24-hour a day care. After the accident, you know, worked for Bite This, did some stuff for WWE Magazine, I believe. But always kept an upbeat attitude about the whole thing, which was always commendable to me. Absolute tragedy on that point. Died of natural causes at the age of 54. Are you too young to remember Draws at all?
No, I'm actually the age where I basically was, you know, young kid peak wrestling watching at that point, right?
So if you are too young, the modern day comparison I might make in some ways, Mojo Rawley, would that be a good one?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
So no, I basically saw all of his run in WWF, and yeah, it was really unfortunate when he got paralyzed. He was a promising athlete. He wasn't amazing, but like he was promising.
In wrestling, he wasn't amazing, but watching him on the football field, he was amazing at that. I mean, he was just all over the field to the point where they would use him as a example in training films when scouting him. He was just. I mean, he's just monster speed and everything. Yeah. Look, there's no, I mean, if you ask me what's a great Draws match to watch, I can't get there. Because again, it's one of those things. He's one of those guys who was solid, but not terribly spectacular as a wrestler. But he did have the athleticism to become in the WWF, and he had the personality to get to the dance. And
the look. He had a look, too. I mean, he had...
You know who he looked like? This might be too arcane a reference for you. But if you ever watched the movie PCU, he looked exactly like Jon Favreau's character in that movie.
It's funny. This is the second time today that PCU has come up.
Actually. Oh, has it?
It's really, really weird. Yes.
One of the greatest screenplays ever written. The movie doesn't know justice, but it was one of those things where I was at NYU when it got released, I believe. And the guy who, one of the co-writers was NYU, so it was in the library. So I read the script. And it was far more crass than anything that made that the screen on there. I mean, they really kind of dummied that thing down. But why did it come up in your conversation? Let's go on a tangent here.
So... I was out at dinner a couple of weeks ago, and we were at like a nice restaurant, at least like an outdoor ranchy thing, and we were walking back to the car, and like about, I don't know, 50, 75 feet at least open air from the door. And Mikhail lights a cigarette. And all of a sudden, this nerdy guy like comes out and goes, "Excuse me, I've had complaints about the smell of smoke coming from over here. Like, we had just lit the cigarette." Like, but he had this whole like very uptight David Spade like track. Yeah.
Well, I thought it was gonna go the other way, because at PCU, the bus with the Parliament Funkadelic shows up on campus, you know, for the big party outside where the flyers say the name of the band, everyone gets laid, and the and of course all this pot smoke comes out of the bus. I thought we were headed towards that, but we head towards the opposite way.
No, we're at like a wine vineyard where we just like, you know, had a not cheap bottle of wine.
Okay.
Yeah, so you know, I did think having a cigarette on the way back to the car was you know, beyond the pale, but apparently it was somehow managing to travel vast distances through open air.
I mean, the largest grasp in that movie is the fact that Jeremy Piven still has his old hairline in it, and he's playing a kid who's like 23, 24, and he looks about 38. it's not a good movie. Anyways, moving on, Forbidden Door, Bryan Danielson breaking his arm in the middle of that Okada match. About 10 minutes in, breaks his arm, completes for the rest of the match. Scheduled to be out for 2 months, but that match was still pretty great. We'll get into ice cold thoughts in the Lazy River for Forbidden Door, but bit of a hiccup in plans. He was scheduled to fight Ishii on Dynamite this past Wednesday. Also plans for him originally to be in the announced Blood and Guts match. That does not appear to be the case right now, Chris.
Yeah. I thought, if we're just going to talk about the match real quick. I really only watched the two mains from Forbidden Door. Like,
fair.
People were talking about them. I was like, got a lot of wrestling to watch this week. I will make sure to at least catch those.
This is why we do a Lazy River. Go ahead. Yeah.
So I thought that Danielson turned in just like an absolute gutsy performance coming. I mean, which is sort of obvious, but.
Did you notice the arm?
Not for a while. Okay. You do start to see more favoring after the initial like first burst of adrenaline, and then he's being very careful towards the end and clever. And I just thought it added so much to the finish and added so much more narrative intrigue to where this is already scheduled to go. It's sort of like really quality improvisation on a song that's already been written. Like they knew where the match needed to go, but Danielson breaking his arm now adds into Okada's heel turn, because he lost to a man with a broken arm. Like, you know, this adds to the Okada losing his step story. And meanwhile, when Danielson comes back, he is completely rebuilt as a heel from his losses to MJF or whatever. He beat Okada with a broken arm.
I think he comes back as a babyface, especially if they have any rights to do the final countdown over and over.
Right. I mean, you know, that would be the smart move at this
point. He was not coming out for this match as a heel at all.
No, and he wasn't really, you know, he did like an after match thing where he was, you know, like not really in the Blackpool Combat Club
character
either. So, I mean, you certainly could bring him back as a heel. We'll see where BCC is. I mean, maybe you have Don Callis basically boot Danielson out. Now that it looks like Callis is taking over BCC, that sort of thing.
I think that's a good idea. Now, the only issue I had, but I had to kind of back off on it after finding out he had a broken arm, I didn't like the convulsions, the pretending that he had hit his head and he was having a seizure about it. But seeing that was probably a cover to try and give some time to plan some things with the broken arm, I'll allow it, Your Honor.
You gotta do what you gotta do. No, I mean, right. Like, if it was in a vacuum, not my favorite thing.
Yeah.
As a mechanism to buy time with a broken arm, perfectly. Definitely. Yeah,
definitely.
Well within, you know, fair play.
Oh, let me get back to my notes because I took it out of the window. Okay, here we go. last week, Vince McMahon made a lot of last-second changes to both Raw and SmackDown.
You don't say.
Yeah.
No way.
Like very Vince shows. Two-minute matches, move on to the next thing. Apparently, this had some people upset, and there was a sit-down schedule between Nick Khan, Triple H, and Vince on Monday. Did it look like to you on Monday that things were hashed out, or did Vince put a line in the sand?
It looked like, you know, Vince made them sit down like dogs. And they went, woof.
I'll see about SmackDown. SmackDown definitely felt like Vince got into that show a lot. You know, the matches that were announced weren't on there. We're doing 2-minute matches, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Raw this week, boy, Raw felt like every other go-home show for Money in the Bank in the past 10 years, to be honest with you. You know, here's the ladders. We're all looking up at the briefcase. None of us like each other. We get into a fight, you know, that kind of stuff. Chris Hero, agenting Collision this past week and also at Forbidden Door. Me likey, Chris. Oh, and also Ring of Honor tapings, I believe. Me likey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, wrestling fan's wrestling fan.
I want him to have a run, especially as I really wanted him to be one of the opponents that Cody Rhodes brought in on that initial TNT title run he had where he was doing open challenges. Because I got a chance to see Hero before Cassius Ohno, after he got cut, after he got brought back, and then after he got cut again. The man's amazing in person. Maybe the brother doesn't like a treadmill, but I have weight issues. Can't knock him. I hate treadmills. But the dude can go in the ring. He's the best comparison, and I think the most lot. He's a much more talented Barry Windham, in my opinion. He really is. I mean, in terms of his athleticism, height, all that other stuff. He is so great to watch in person. I'd love it for him to have one last run as a talent in AEW. Even, you know, give me a Kings of Wrestling reunion with Claudio. You know, make him a tag team. Hell, bring him in as Danielson's temporary replacement in Blood and Guts. You know, why not? Do that for me. But no, very happy that Chris Hero is still working. But again, personally, I'd love to see him as a talent again.
Yeah, I would like to see him have one more, you know, go at it. I always liked him. Yeah.
Shake up in the announcing department in the Fed. Jackie Redmond will take on an expanded role with the company beginning this Saturday, July 1st. That's tomorrow for you keeping score. Redmond will serve as backstage interviewer for Monday Night Raw alongside Byron Saxton. Additionally, she will join Kayla Braxton to co-host WWE's premium live event kickoff shows with Booker T and Peter Rosenberg. Thoughts and prayers. Redmond will also continue to do studio work throughout the year. More than 10 years of sports broadcasting experience, Redmond has served as host and reporter for NHL Network, WBD Sports, and Rogers Sportsnet in Canada. She began working with WWE in 2021 as co-host of Raw Talk and Talking Smack, which nobody watches anymore. During hockey, that's
still
me.
Talking Smack?
That's me. That's me talking. Sorry. During hockey season, Redmond will continue to work for NHL Network and WBD Sports. Megan Morant is taking on an expanded full-time role on WWE's Stamford Studios, where she will host Raw Talk, SmackDown, Lowdown, international shows for television, and various digital shows, including the Monday Night Raw sidecast on Twitch. Kathy Kelly will move to Friday Night SmackDown, where she will join Kayla Braxton as a backstage interviewer. Now to editorialize a bit. I think Kathy Kelly's not a Vince person. She left when Vince was at his most obnoxious. Triple H brought her back. I don't think Vince likes Kathy Kelly. I can't prove that. That's me doing reckless speculation, and I apologize. And maybe it's not a like thing. Maybe it's a look thing. I don't know. But she's getting sent to SmackDown, so she still has a job. So what do I know? Maybe it's just I need to switch things up around here. Any general thoughts on this, or should we move on?
Move on.
Okay. Positive news. Sadie Gibbs making a return. Not sure if you remember who Sadie Gibbs was. Do you?
No. Who is Sadie?
Okay. Sadie Gibbs in the infancy of AEW was the one with the hype packages that they gave her She was the gymnast from Britain, I believe. And I want to say that. I might be dead wrong on that. I apologize. I should have done more show prep. I didn't. But no, Sadie Gibbs was pushed very early as a unsigned talent that nobody else had found. And then she was brought in to do all this athletic stuff. And I believe she immediately got hurt during it. But she and Kylie Rae were really the two big prospects on the babyface side when AEW was beginning. And of course, Kylie Rae, her issues got the better of her. And Sadie Gibbs just wasn't ready for prime time at that time. Also had a few issues, also had a few injuries. But if you go back and watch like some of those early Dynamites, she's on there and her hype packages are on there. And she looked like, I mean, those hype packages, I mean, the two hype packages that I always think of with AEW that they did great on was that one. And if you remember the one with Wardlow originally, where he's going to the parking lot, I believe Aaron Solo is one of the thugs in the parking lot. He just beats up all the guys after being dressed up in this nice clothing. I mean, they used to do really good promo packages with videos with guys to make them seem like big deal. But since you don't know who she is, I will move on. Pregnancies have gone uncongratulated on this show in the past couple weeks. Some of your favorites will not be on TV for a while, in addition to Ty Mello and Alexa Bliss. Also add Billie Kay, Kylie Rae, and Shake Them Rope's personal favorite due to the improv connection, Vicky Dreamboat. So mazel mazel, good things. Numbers for this week. SmackDown, 2,354,061 in the 18 to 49. I believe they were number two for the night against a soccer game, I believe. Or footy, as we like to call it. AEW Rampage, 391,000 viewers. The second episode of AEW Collision, down, expectedly mostly, 595,000 viewers, 18 to 49.21. Raw, 1,973,000 viewers, a 0.61, a great number for them. The second highest of the year since the Raw after WrestleMania, but it did better in the demo than that episode. NXT last night, on Tuesday, 622,000 viewers. And Dynamite this week, 809,000. Any thoughts coming out of those numbers for you, Chris, especially in the second week of Collision?
What was the number on Collision again?
It was 595,000 compared to the 800-something thousand of the debut.
And that's kind of where I thought they would settle in at.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, No.
Okay.
I'm just trying to think, like, is there anything to be gleaned with like Dynamite's 800,000 and Collision's 500,000? You knew that like the initial Punk bump wasn't gonna last. I think the question is, does this settle in more around the 400,000 mark?
Well, they're doing interesting things because I'm comparing it more to Rampage, actually, where it's also on a Friday night. I mean, last week Dynamite had shows on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, which is preposterous for any fan to be able to keep up with. But they've been loading up Rampage a little bit more. You're not just getting best friends matches on there. Collision, this week's going to be very interesting because Punk was not advertised, but he's supposed to be on there. But advertised was that MJF's going to have a match on Collision. Your world champion. Let's see if he draws on Saturdays. I know it's probably unfair, but it's there, and we have to take a look at that.
Well, and it's a fair move to make, given you're not actually asking the guy to wrestle all that often, even him just being there.
Yes.
Like, this is how Khan should be using him.
Yeah, I think I'm interested just in, well, because advertising the world champ, it did a number on Rampage a couple of times. Like, I remember there was a Mox number that was pretty good when he was champ. There was a Kenny Omega match on a Rampage that did okay numbers. I am of the opinion that a lot of WWE fans just watch Raw and a lot of AEW fans just watch Dynamite, and that they'll watch the pay-per-views. And then if they can get to this other stuff on weekend days, which are kind of... Weekend shows are hard because it's the weekend. I know that seems like an obvious thing to say, but people like to do stuff on weekends, not necessarily sit at home and watch television. There are anomalies, of course, the TGI Friday on ABC, Miami Vice on NBC at 10 p.m. Fridays, which is a death slot for any other show, but became a hit for NBC at that time and place. It's one of those things where I think discerning viewers are starting to discern a little bit more, Chris.
Well, I mean, why would you watch something on Saturday Night Live? I mean, why would you watch Saturday Night Live, the show? But, like, what would be the draw for you to be watching live television on Saturday night? It's probably a sporting event, but because you're probably out and watching it out in public. I think there's just a real ceiling to, you know, mass appeal and also people who stay at home and watch wrestling in the year 2023.
Agreed. And there's a lot of wrestling to pick from. And that, you know, that makes it something. So that'll do it for the mailbag. Shit, I always say that.
I want people to send fan mail.
Send questions, comments to Chris Novembrino or Dr._Nove at Instagram. DM him all your things.
At Instagram, yeah.
The Instagram, just all those, yeah. All those messages. And he will organize them and bring them to this show and ask me. It'll be great.
We'll call it Novi's Mailbag. And
yes,
theme song.
Yes.
Be like, yeah,
we'll get you a
Novi's Mailbag.
Closed on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Yeah.
And we'll get you a puppet sidekick. It'll be great. Canny will co-host the mailbag with you.
Oh, man, that'd be great. Can we get a sponsor?
This show is good. Off the rails already.
No, this show does not suck, and this show is good, and doing a good job again.
Okay. Now the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watch on this massive, massive week of professional wrestling, whatever comes to mind, whatever we think of, it'll go here. We both have ice cold takes on a pay-per-view from Sunday and a preview of Money in the Bank on Saturday. So I will start with the ice cold takes because they will be quick. I did, in fact, pay full freight for Forbidden Door. I quite enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed Zero Hour, which, despite making it a far longer night than it ever should have, there was some pretty good stuff here. Athena is just on the run of her career. Color me a fan of El Phantasmo. ELP is great, and I really enjoyed the match between he and Stu Grayson. I always get Stu Grayson mixed up with Stu Grimson, the former enforcer of the Los Angeles Kings, but he's Stu Grayson formerly of
The Dark Order.
The Dark Order, which we will get into a little bit, probably, if we talk Dynamite here.
No, yeah, I want to talk about
He is now a member of the Righteous, an act. I kind of like the Righteous. Just their gimmick. I don't necessarily need them as wrestlers, but I dig the gimmick. I dig Vincent and the music and everything. It's cool. The main card, look, it was spectacular. There wasn't a dud in the entire thing, in my opinion. Thought the women's match was solid. I thought the one thing, you know, don't ask Sting to do timing spots in his mid-60s because he got hit hard on a I want to say 650 by Sammy Guevara outside on the table. But that entire match, that was a lot of fun, even though it was in the dead spot. Look, Ospreay and Omega, fun match. Uncle Dave gave it 6 stars. Okay. He also said it was a clean finish, to which I took some heat on the Twitters today, because I think if you get hit with a screwdriver and you got Don Callis screwing around, getting thrown out and coming back, not really a clean technical wrestling thing, but I understand the pin. It's like that scene in Fletch. Well, he died suddenly. It was such a shame. Well, he had cancer and been dying for 4 years. Yeah, but the end, it was sudden. It was clean at the end. It wasn't clean throughout the entire match. If you didn't think it was the greatest match in wrestling history, I think you should be able to criticize professional wrestling and watch actual pro wrestling, unlike some people on the internet. Take my little dig there at the pretentious gatekeeping at times. But yeah, I mean, What else was on this show, Chris? Do you have the card in front of you by chance?
I don't have the card in front of me.
Okay, let me find it real quick here because I vamp a bit here.
Yeah.
What did you think of Osprey Omega? Because you watched it. You said you
I did. Look, I didn't see their first match, and so I felt like there was missing context. So, absent that missing context, I thought it was entertaining, but to your point, right, like, I'm going to give 5 stars or out, or even sort of cusp into the 5-star range.
Okay.
Hold on.
Wait, what did I call ELP earlier? Did I call him El Phantasmo?
I don't know, but like,
well, he's El Phantasmo if I screwed that
good.
Up.
No, that's good. I'm going to complete the circuit now. Can okay. I? Are we
yes.
good?
Yes. Hey,
can I?
Yes.
Let's take it in.
Go.
Here I am. Give me the power. I'm going to give it the juice.
You have the conch, Piggy.
I have the conch.
Yes.
When I am considering anything in the like 4.5 or 5-star range, there is usually very little interference in those matches, because though that sort of rating for me has a big emphasis on the storytelling and the technical wrestling in there. You know, a really story plot heavy sort of match where we're doing stuff on the outside. It wasn't like it's mega heavy, but it was, you know, you have Don Callis outside with 2 mystery men. Like, who are the mystery men is like the big intrigue here, right? And still,
and they never paid it off, but I swear right. One of them was J.R. Kratos. And I think the other one was Lance Storm. Don't quote me on that, but I think it was Lance Storm. Uncredited because he works for TNA, but it looked like Lance Storm.
Right. Well, you know what I'm saying. Like, you know, who are these goons that Callis?
It was a MacGuffin.
Having all of that stuff in there for me inherently puts the ceiling in the rating of the rating of this match at like 4.25 maximum, right? And then like that would be like if it was like killer from there. And for me, it was good. So I was like, you know, a 4-star match. It was, you know, gimmicky. Callis is hammy, you know, and I think that it was good to get the belt off of Omega so that you could focus in on this. And I mean, a quality trade-off. I think AEW, in terms of what they got out of the card with Omega and Danielson, that was such a solid piece of business for both companies. And I think AEW probably even has a stronger character in Danielson coming out of this.
Okay, quick hits. Mogul Embassy against Chaos. Great match. Enjoyed it. I liked the Mogul Embassy with Swerve. Swerve being the workhorse and the other two guys. Not the biggest Brian Cage fan in the world, but it was fun. Athena being Billy Starks. Liked it. Athena's on the run of her life. Phantasmo and Grayson, again, already said something about that. Los Ingobernables de Japón versus United Empire. Fun match. Good to see TJP in a major organization again. I know he's been in New Japan for a while. I get it. He has some terrible thoughts, but or takes on vaccines and stuff, but you know, I enjoyed the match. That's all that matters. MJF versus Tanahashi. Tanahashi is like pizza, even bad pizza is good. Tanahashi was hurting, I think, from doing back-to-back matches. I liked it though. It was fun. MJF is always fun. He's just a pure heel. He's just total gimmick heel, and he doesn't have to, this didn't have to be a work rate match. I liked it. Punk and Kojima. Love this. I love that he was using both Kojima and Tenzan's moves against him. Punk deciding to play heel and do Hogan cosplay in Toronto. I love it. I think he's perfect to heel on the Elite type fans, and maybe he's a babyface over in the on the other show. I'm kind of digging what they're doing, the vibe here with them. The four-way for the international title, Orange Cassidy and Daniel Garcia are great, and Zack Sabre Jr. and Shibata are great too. I mean, everything about this match I loved, and I love Orange Cassidy now, so great. Sonata and Jungle Boy Jack Perry, I thought it over delivered. I know that there's the New Japan purists don't like Sonata. They think he kind of half-asses it out there. I thought it over delivered. I thought Jack Perry did great, and I loved the turn against Hook after the match. I thought that was really good. The 10-man tag, you know, what are you gonna say? Spectacular stuff from everybody involved, and I was definitely shocked that Ishii got the pin. Because usually they just beat him every time he's in there. He's the guy to beat. And of course, they, you know, Wednesday night, they come back and beat him. But nevertheless, it was good to see Ishii get a win in AEW for once. Storm and Nightingale, fun match. Tony Storm's great. You know, love. And Willow was really good in this match, too. So nothing wrong with that. And of course, I've talked about the other three matches. So that is the cleanup from there. Hey, let's get something from Chris on the Lazy River before we go into our preview on Money in the Bank. Go ahead, Chris.
Sure. So let's talk about the Adam Page and Dark Order drums here before.
Please.
I think it is a really interesting choice of characterization and personally very funny that Dark Order are like not justified in walking away from Blackpool Combat Club after all this time. When Blackpool Combat Club comes out and starts beating up on the Bucks and Page, the Dark Order don't actually join in. They walk away, which is kind of what Page did to them for literally months and is their whole point. And I thought it was a really questionable bit of characterization. Like, if you're gonna make them heal, make them heal. This anguish where Page is looking at the Dark Order, this melodrama, nonsense. Go away.
I'm gonna one up you here, even Chris. This entire story had casting going back and forth as to who were the good guys and who were the bad guys.
Right, right, right. Like, yeah, like if you go back to the Omega Page title match or whatever, there is literally no way to look at the Bucks as the good guys between Dark Order and the Young Bucks. And even now, as babyfaces, they are always dickheads.
Yes, they know that's the
whole always, that's, that, always, been, always, always.
This entire like, vignette, this entire vignette in, to set up this match.
They act like they're dead.
Yes.
They like, okay, I mean, if you and I hadn't been friends for a minute, I don't know, because we had some sort of falling out. And like during that time, like the intervening year, you had made a new really good friend. And then all of a sudden, like I'm back in the picture and I'm acting like this guy is just like a jerk. Like, or like he's a new good friend, but he's nerdy, let's say. Like,
okay. So, well, before you put nerdy, I was going to say, so I've befriended Joe Lanza and you don't like it.
Yeah, like, you know, it's something like, he's like not just nerdy, but, you know, I mean, like socially awkward, sort of
yes.
Like a weird, like wet fart in the conversations at times or whatever. But he's like a good friend or whatever.
Okay.
And I am being a perpetual dick to him. I'm the jerk in this situation.
Yes.
Like, it's not like, you know, like, what am I basically saying? The reason the Bucks don't like the Dark Order essentially is because they don't dress quote unquote cool. Like,
you know, this is an 80s, this is Patrick Dempsey and Can't Buy Me Love.
Yeah, this like they're like the sweater vest bunch, and like the Young Bucks are like the 80s yeah, version of cool.
Yeah, or Mean Girls or Heathers or any of these other things.
But they're the baby faces. It's like if the Mean Girls were the good guys.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. It's like, yeah, I'm gonna go hang out with my cool friends. Screw you nerds playing D&D in the Dark Order. I'm with the jock crew now and I want to keep their friendships. So we get that and then we're like, oh, I'm supposed to boo the Dark Order for saying, hey, we want to fight you. And I thought, by the way, let's give some props here. I thought Alex Reynolds and Una were fantastic.
Oh, God,
promo.
No, I thought so too. I mean, their promo to me came off completely baby
yes.
Because
yes.
Their logic is 100% airtight. You have not been, I'm answering our calls, wanting to hang out with us, always blowing us off. You never have time for us. A television interview is more interesting than talking to us.
Making fun of us when we say hi to you in the hallway.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's there have been any number of times you've slighted us. Like, no, tonight, apparently we need to slap you to get your respect. Like, I thought it was perfectly good.
And then we get to the match. And we have Silver calling out Hangman, saying, come on, let's bring it. And we're supposed to be booing the Dark Order, but this Canadian crowd loves the Canadians, all of whom are Dark Order. So they start cheering them. And of course, while the Dark Order are trying to get over his heels, we have the Bucks doing things like putting out cigarettes on the back of Uno before they pile drive them and stuff. And we have Emo Weak Sauce Cowboy.
I can't make a decision on this. Like,
you were just being a jerk to them.
You know, I mean, it's like you're just being a jerk on it, but like there at a certain point, this sort of like moral anguish to me comes off as really unattractive and like weak and obnoxious and heelish. You know, it like, this is not that hard of a moral situation, Adam. But, you know, you should have been a better friend. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, this is like, I haven't called my mom in 4 months, and I'm having a dark night of the soul wandering the streets at midnight. Call your effing mom.
Yes.
Call her. Just call her. Like this isn't like a complicated calculus where, you know, or a trolley car problem where one will die or five will be saved. Like,
you know what this is?
Don't be a dick.
Yeah. During the match, this is the guy who's dating two women and he doesn't want to dump one of them. So he's going to lead them both on in a way, but he really likes the girl who's bad for him, but she's hot. But here's the woman who will stand by him and you know, has been supportive of him through, like, John Mulaney's wife. And said, look, I will support you through your dark days while you're going through rehab. He's like, no, I want to bang Olivia Munn because she's hot. but I want to keep you as a wife. It doesn't work that way. Pick one and live with your decision, Hangman Adam Page. As I go through the worst simile ever.
No, I found this writing to be really funny. That I'm assuming that the Bucks and Page are largely the architects of this narrative. So yes. They want to be the baby faces coming out of this, but they have done
passive aggressive
absolutely nothing. And, look, I'm not going to get into the psychological analysis here, but, like, I think it is really interesting that when tasked with a writing challenge, somehow they managed to write themselves as passive-aggressive jerks.
Well, that's what I mean on the show. It. Yeah. I don't mean in real life. I meant on the show.
No.
The show.
Well, I mean, like, that, but that's the rap on the sheets.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And that was in my head as I'm watching this going, like, you wrote yourselves as jerks. You realize that, right? Like, it's like writing It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and not realizing that Mac's a dickhead.
Write what you know. How do you want to character ourselves? Well, let's just be aggressive, but we're still friendly with Adam Page, but we kind of don't like them. Ah, passive aggressive jerks? Sure thing, buddy. Here we go. I go, oh my God.
And they're basically, the Bucks are yelling at Adam the whole time, turn on your friends, which is quintessential heel stuff.
Yes.
You really get down to it. Like,
we won't let you sit at our lunch table anymore if you don't disown the nerds.
No respect for the fact that these guys were his friend.
Yes.
They weren't. That, like, when he had nobody, he had the Dark Order, and the Bucks are on the other side of the ring, just going like, kill him, put him down, they mean nothing.
You know who loves this story the most is, I bet Vince McMahon is watching this story going, come on, Hangman, you have
absolutely
no friends. Grab the brass ring, you jerk. I want to sign you over here.
He's watching this and going, this is brilliant long-term storytelling.
This is great.
That's what losers.
This is cinema.
And now he's stabbing the loser guys in the neck. That's great. This is a baby face.
Gets on his Twitter burner. This is cinema. Retweet.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The match itself was great.
I really liked the match.
I love the Dark Order's finish. That whole, you know, kick, belly to back, dive over, pin the legs behind him type thing. It only gets a two most of the time unless it's a jobber team. But, man, I love that. They gel so well together. And Alex Reynolds, I love that Tony Schiavone always points out how good he is because he doesn't get enough credit versus the characters. But I thought he was fantastic in this match too. He's the one guy who sees through Adam Page.
Yeah.
I'm just going to punch him in the face because he was a jerk. You guys can have your moral quandaries too, but I do want to fight him. Bring it, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, I really know.
I just watched this whole thing and just went, this is one of the more, it's a great angle. It's really compelling, but it's one of the more miscast angles in a long time because this should have been Adam Page's heel turn.
Yeah. Probably.
Particularly with the completely incoherent justification of, dude, somebody had to fight Blackpool Combat Club. It was like non sequitur. Like, no, actually no one had to. They're just there.
You know what? I'm gonna defend what the Dark Order did, because if you remember, Mox beat the living crap out of most of those Blackpool Combat Club guys. So why would they jump in and help them
Dark Order guys? Right. No. There was a time where Mox beat the crap out of all the Dark Order guys and Page did nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 100% fair play to you. This is a taste of what you did to us so many times.
Yeah.
And a very entertaining match with like hilariously baffling writing when you consider what the week to week has been.
Moving on to WWE Money in the Bank from jolly old England early tomorrow morning. it may be over by the time you listen to this, to be honest with you, but, we'll preview it anyways and see how we did in terms of our results. 7 matches on the card, starting with, for the WWE Intercontinental Championship, Gunther versus Matt Riddle. Boy, I liked that Gunther versus Sami Zayn match until I didn't. But Gunther is a national treasure, and we should keep him as long as we can. I think he wins this.
Yeah, Gunther's winning this.
Okay. Your newly unified, somewhat, tag team titles on the women's side, Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler beating Chris's favorite team, Isla Dawn and Alba Fire, for the NXT titles as well. So we've united those. But they'll be taking on the team of Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez. Any chances of a title change here or no?
No, I don't think we're going to live forever.
I don't think so either. I don't think we're going to live till Tuesday. Cody Rhodes versus Dominic Mysterio with Rhea Ripley in a singles match in what has been a very entertaining build for me. Look, I know Dominic Mysterio isn't the best wrestler in the world, but he's getting so much heat. And even if it's somehow everybody's in on the heat, it's still heat. And it's still pretty damn great. And I think Mommy's going to interfere a bit in this match, but I think Cody Rhodes eventually wins. I hope he does. They can't give him the loss here unless Brock comes out and kills him. But Brock's going to come out and kill him at some point in this match, I think.
Man, I don't know. Because I could totally see Dominic winning this match.
But I mean, with Brock interference?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, like, that's what I meant.
No, he's going to go over clean like Ospreay.
Well, you know... Well, you know, Rhea hits him in the nuts. Dominic rolls him up for the pin, 1-2-3, which Dave would then call a clean win.
Yeah, no, I'm saying I think there's going to be a lot of extras here, right? But I think there's a pathway for Dominic to get the win. And
oh yeah, that's what's going to happen. Dominic's going to get the win, but it's just going to be because Brock comes out, and it's going to be that Weasley, and they're going to get the heat on him. And everybody's gonna be.
And I beat Cody Rhodes all by myself. Yeah. Yeah.
I beat him all. Yeah. The Miz push is what we like to call this. Yeah. And I'm fine with that. He's, it's entertaining to watch the listen to the boos because you're just amazed by it. And we'll get into another crowd reaction that has just been amazing in many ways in a bit. The bloodline of Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa with Paul Heyman versus the Usos, Jay and Jimmy in a bloodline Civil War tag team match. What that means, I'm not quite sure. I originally had a bit here where I was going to play some Ken Burns Civil War music while acting like a union. Dearest wife, it has been a long 3 years since we've been trudging through this Bloodline storyline, and I am also very tired, but I write to you in hopes that... In Chancellorsville, we were repelled by the forces of the wise man. But we linger on, and our resolve is steady. Please send coffee and hardtack.
And tell Velma the Mule I love her.
Tell Velma the Mule I love her.
She'll know what it means.
Impromptu, Shake the Ropes Theater. People have been asking for years, and it just comes up there. Oh, good Lord. How do you find this match? God, we're ridiculous. How does this match go?
I mean, it's got to be lots of drums around, like playing for the heart of Solo. I mean,
oh yeah.
It's gonna be.
No, you're right.
In a sense, it's gonna be very similar to what we saw at AEW here with Adam Page and the melodrama.
There's gonna be some acting in this.
Oh, acting.
Yes.
Like you're gonna have Roman like yelling at him stuff. And like eventually Solo is going to destroy them both. I think
I think he loses it here, or do we just set the seeds for it?
I think he destroys his brothers here. I think like Roman,
Jimmy and Jay?
I think Roman turns him into a monster here. Like,
oh,
this,
okay. I thought you were saying Solo.
They do the thing that you should do in this situation, where you have like the compelling friends on one side and the conflicted person on the other. You break them bad. And I think Solo will turn into a monster, and Roman will now be enjoying, you know, his Matanza, so to say, to do a callback to Lucha Underground.
Do we see another member of the Bloodline here? Join? Is there a Samoan somewhere getting trained? Let's say Jimmy Fatu. Does he get signed and appear here? I don't think that, but you never know. I'll say no.
I don't think there's another member, or if there is, like, what was that guy? Didn't they have a member of the family who was doing like the bleach blonde hair thing? That guy, Kona Reeves.
I don't think Kona Reeves was a member of the family.
No. Oh, okay.
I think it's Sean Maluda was like a
Sean Maluda. Sean, that's right. Like Sean Maluda, like you could have him as like a henchy. So like now you have like monster Solo, and like you bring back Sean Maluda as like the henchy or something like that.
Okay, hear me out. I think I know the end of this. Roman accidentally spears Solo, and quote unquote accidentally, he gets all mad at Roman. And, you know, or he's just discombobulated. And, you know, Jimmy and Jay show compassion to Solo, but it's all a ruse. And then Solo takes advantage of their compassion. He just absolutely just, you know, Samoan spikes both of them. Roman gets the pin. Ha, ha, ha. There we go. But it sets the seeds for, wait a second. Why did you spear me type of a thing? But they don't pay it off yet. Yeah, I think you're right, though. I think... Solo just becomes an unrepentant monster here and starts killing his brothers. But either Jimmy or Jay is going to be Adam Page here, right? Uso.
No, I mean, I guess even now moving the plot through Jimmy, who, as we all know, has been the narrative focus of this entire 3 years.
Lo, this many 3 years of this Bloodline Civil War.
They did twin magic on the storyline.
Yeah.
They rolled one guy out of the ring and rolled the other one in.
Yeah, when Jimmy was the devil on the shoulder, not the angel on Jay's shoulder. What are you doing?
A lot of strong writing.
Seth friggin' Rollins versus Finn Balor for the World Heavyweight Championship.
I think Seth friggin' Rollins retains here.
Yes. I hate his character so much.
I know
match is gonna slap. This match is gonna be great.
I know this is the thing, is like the matches have actually all been good, and I have to just disconnect the theme song, which I've been over, is like a grindcore Seven Nation Army, and this like Joker character thing that he does that is horrible. And not, it has had go away heat for me for years now. The matches are good. He does a lot of good in ring work. I actually have been thinking very highly of what he's been turning in. I just have to really shut off the other stuff.
I'm going to be interested in the audience for Finn Balor, since it's in the UK. I'm wondering if they do a little dipsy do. Maybe this is where Finn Balor breaks off from the Judgment Day. Maybe this is where we get JD McDonagh joining the Judgment Day and then turning on Finn to take leadership, much like AJ Styles taking leadership of the Bullet Club. I don't know, but something's up with Finn here. I don't know what it is though. Women's Money in the Bank ladder match: Zelina Vega versus Becky Lynch versus Zoe Stark versus Aunt Pam versus Io Sky versus 46-year-old Trish Stratus, who is still knocking it out of the park, but 46 years old in a ladder match on a vanity run. Good for her. Ladder matches are dangerous. Who do you got taking the briefcase here, Chris?
I think she's winning it.
You think Trish is winning this?
Okay. Yeah, because that keeps her, like, she doesn't need to wrestle nearly as much, so they can just kind of keep her off when they want to use it. It allows for a lot more smoke and mirrors for how they want to use Trish going forward. She can be a manager, have the briefcase. She can, like, talk about letting someone else cash in the briefcase and use it as, like, a prop that way. I'm going with Trish.
I think that's the second strongest pick here. I think Becky and Rhea eventually have a date, and I don't think Becky needs the briefcase. Of course, she was holding it at the end of Raw. You don't need, I mean, that tells me a tell. I'm going with Io Sky here to cash in on Asuka at some point and possibly cash in unsuccessfully, probably because of Bayley then as well. But I do think we get some, I think the finish of this match, look, I think of course Zoe and Trish work together as a unit until they don't. Bayley and Io work together as a unit until there's a point where Bayley wants the briefcase and Io takes it from her, or Bayley tries to take it for her at the last minute, she gets knocked off the ladder. But I think Io Sky gets this, and it's for an Asuka program of some sorts. And I think we finally get the split of Io and Bayley here.
Oh, I think so. I just don't think Zoe and Trish are falling apart. Or if they do, it's that Trish is going to basically, push Zoe to the side in an effort to get the briefcase. Essentially, this is all part of her ultimate opportunist sort of plan.
Zoe has a new theme song with NXT's Alicia Taylor playing the drums. And it's
that's cool.
Yeah, Alicia Taylor's great on the drums. Love her. And then to finish off the Men's Money in the Bank ladder match, I'll let you go first on this one. Ricochet versus Shinsuke Nakamura versus L.A. Knight. By the way, a friend of a kid's of mine goes, I know wrestlers, and he imitated L.A. Knight, Chris.
Yeah.
I am shocked by this.
Dude, no. I mean, he's popular. He is.
Versus Santos. Yeah, versus Santos Escobar versus Butch versus Damian Priest versus Logan Paul. Who you got, Chris?
I think they're going with Logan Paul. I know we want LA Knight to get the briefcase. I know it makes sense. But especially if we are in Vince WWE mode, he's going with the biggest stars.
Logan. Yeah, the evolution of this match has been interesting. Because if you told me originally who was going to get this, I would have told you this was where they split off Damian Priest from the Judgment Day.
Right. Right.
And it looked they were going that way, especially for the time served and the great job he did with Bad Bunny. And then LA Knight caught fire. And I won't say he was a popular pick amongst people I talked to, but he was definitely up there because, he's the kind of guy, he's not really considered a great wrestler by a lot of the fans, but he is a popular wrestler by a lot of the fans. And, dude, he's gotten over with his mouth. I know. Is he Kenny Omega? No. Is he more well known than Kenny Omega? Maybe. Bigger audience. Who knows? But anyways, but then Logan Paul entered the picture. And he's had the history with Seth. People want to boo him. What better way to both get a lot of mainstream pub and also piss off a lot of your fans, which is what Vince loves to do for sport, than to give it to Logan Paul, who possibly cashes in at the end of the night and becomes a transitional champion of some sort? I'm not saying that. He may wait for, I don't know, a Saudi Arabia show to cash in and do a match there. He may wait for Mania. But I think Logan Paul is eventually going to successfully cash in this briefcase at some point. But so I have Logan Paul as well. I think this match is going to be amazing. Looking at the guys who are in it, you know, between Santos, Logan, Ricochet.
It's one of the more stacked Money in the Banks in a long time, especially with the high flyers with, you know, Lucha Underground alumni Prince Puma and King Cuerno. And yeah, you got Shinsuke Nakamura here. Nice. I mean, he's not going to be high flying, but you know, you've got a lot of quality talents. Logan Paul loves his high spots too.
So oh yeah,
you can imagine coordination between Ricochet, Paul, and now Santos to do like just some like a couple of incredible.
Yeah, I mean, features. You remember the spot Ricochet and Logan did in the Royal Rumble?
Right? I know, right?
The John Woo spot, yeah.
Imagine that re-raised with the third person.
Yeah, I'm kind of here for that. Also, look, if LA Knight wins this, I'm here for the guy who nobody likes and was fired by the company coming in here and winning the briefcase. It's kind of, look, I get it. It's a Damian Sandow type move. But Damian Sandow got his flowers getting the briefcase, so I'm happy with that. He probably shouldn't. I mean, they treat him like a jerk, but, you know, he got the briefcase. So, I'm happy with almost anybody in this match winning this briefcase at any point. But, yeah, that'll be Money Bank. That'll be tomorrow. Chris, anything in your lazy river?
Let me see. What else happened on Dynamite? I thought the main event was really entertaining. I thought the home stretch with Sting and Jericho, you got a great on a curve, obviously, but man, they were entertaining. Come on now. Like I really enjoyed that. That was a really quality little match.
Chris, and Sting is 64 years old.
I know, it's crazy. It's crazy what the to F- think about that.
And he hit that table full flush. In the ribs, it looked like. In fact, I don't know if someone was telling me he hit the ground first and then hit the table. Doesn't matter. It looks like he went ribs first into that table. And it looked like it absolutely sucked to me. But Tom Cruise is 60, Sting is 64. And they both have just decided we have nothing to live for. We don't care about our lives or retirement. We don't have a 401k. The hell with this. I'm jumping off a ladder from the ring to two tables where Sammy is in the middle of both tables. He's not even flush on the table. He's in between the. I am shocked. This puts the Terry Funk middle-aged crazy run to shame in some ways. I mean, look, is he the greatest wrestler in the world? No.
No, but like the amount of risk and like work that he's going to put into matches regularly during this run is
curve. Great on a curve.
Great on a curve, and it's his gamedness is just it's flabbergasting. Every time I see him doing his thing, he's at like, you know, one of the most over baby faces on the TV for me, because I'm like, dude, that guy's 64 and he's doing that. I've been watching him do this his whole life, or my whole life, and the fact that he's still entertaining like this, it's like nostalgic, but like also now there's this novelty of seeing it's not what it was, but what it is now is different and interesting and compelling and cool in its own way.
It's the end of the Wild Bunch. It's not like it used to be, but it'll do. I would not be surprised between the match on on Forbidden Door and this match, maybe he gets a little bit of a vacation. He has been taking a beating in the past few. I will stay on Dynamite and give you a few quick hits here. I loved Angelo Parker's sell on the orange punch. That thing was so beautiful. And he just laid out so great. I wrote, look, I enjoyed that. But 2.0 and Daniel Garcia, come on. That's my wheelhouse. I love that. I liked the Jungle Boy promo. Was it high art? No. But I'm grading on a curve with Jungle Boy, who brought absolutely nothing to that Pillars four-way in terms of promo work. It was a start. And it looked like he had some legitimate anger behind there, like he had something he wanted to say to people. And I dug it.
Yeah, okay. It started to get there for me. And I think the real nut of this thing working for me is going to be the interplay with Taz. Jungle Boy needs to be not overtly, but subtextually very jealous of Hook and Taz's relationship.
I like that.
Yeah. This is not about the belt. Like, cause I mean, and you've kind of laid a lot of the rails. Like, it's not even a recognized belt. It's like, okay, so then what this is really about then, dude,
is your dad.
It's your dad. Like, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty. I need to bring that up to, we came up with another idea on the Dynamite show. I'm going to throw this out for you. Is that he eventually, because he brought up Anna Jay in the promo, that the JAS becomes the Jack Appreciation Society. And he joins to lead them, and he forces Jericho out of there. And he's here to take the leadership role, and he's ready to go full-on sports entertainment as well.
That would be a good way to go. I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah. But no, I'd go personal. I'd eventually have...
Jarrett version. Personal issues draw money. I'm here for it.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I would have Hook basically have the title of your dad moment, and he chooses his dad, and that's how Perry gets the title.
Huh. Okay. I can dig that. I loved Ruby Riott's promo. I think Ruby Riott has a great grasp of what she's doing here as a heel in AEW. Much more so than when she was what she was doing in WWE before she got cut. You could pull your head out of the toilet for a moment and listen to me. Great lines. I think she's the natural leader for this outcast faction. And I just thought she did solid work on the mic. Both these shows, like I told you this before we went to air. Collision was great for me. I love Collision. I think they did promos before the matches, much like Saturday night's main event. I thought that was a good move. I think their interplay of promos and wrestling is really, really strong over on the Saturday show. And I think the style of wrestling isn't as indie-rific as Wednesday. It's a little bit more punch, kick, suplex, which appeals to me. I think what they're doing with Andrade is some great stuff versus the Dark Triangle, the House of Black. I think that's a fun feud going on. I think both AEW shows have something for everybody. And I think it's also, I'm going to kind of rescind my, there's no stylistic choice here for now, because it feels like there is a stylistic choice, even if they're not hyping it up. And I think it's enough of a difference for me to see fans of different shows as they go on. But that's pretty much what I have. I did not watch NXT this week.
I mean, the one other thing I thought was kind of interesting is you did hear in the Dark Order match a quick moment of a CM Punk chance, and they got booed out, but like,
yes.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, okay, all right, just take a note of when these things happen.
Yeah, it was interesting because he was getting boos during a Forbidden Door as well, and you're kind of like, okay, the Elite fans do not like Punk at all, and he will bask in that and he will soak in it, but it's going to be a dangerous game to then go over to Collision and play the super white hot baby face, which is why I was kind of expecting on the pilot of the show to be like the end of the Shield pilot, where you find out Vic Mackey is the bad guy in this show as a dirty cop, and we go from there. But yeah, it'll be interesting. Did you watch NXT at all?
No,
I did not either.
I needed a week off from that show.
So we were a little lazy on the Lazy River this week. We'll do better next week.
But will they?
But will they? the Bloodline Civil War. Maybe we'll do something in post about that later. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at Dr. Nov, D-O-C-T-O-R underscore N-O-V on the Instagram. You can just follow the show on Twitter at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. I only update that site when the shows go out. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Shows for any kind of fandom, including the five-star match game show, Good, the Bad, the Hungy, You've Got to Be Kidding Me, which is a TNA retrospective podcast, and of course, the flagship with Rich and Joe, who are never short of opinions either. If you like what I do, and hey, why wouldn't you? Or even if you hate what I do and just want to listen to more of me and hate me, come over to patreon.com/fightgamemedia for $5 a month. More podcasts of people who are very opinionated, but I do a show on Wednesday nights about 10 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air. We record, called of all things, the Dynamite Show, which is all things AEW, a thorough deconstruction with Paul Ace Fontaine, and it hits your podcast feeds about 90 minutes after Dynamite ends. And that's what I have. Chris, what do you have?
I have the final week of my Jimi Hendrix lecture series. You can get it archivally here. Each session was 2 hours long. First week covered Jimi Hendrix's early biography. Second week covered Are You Experienced. This week covered Axis Bold as Love, which is actually my favorite album of his. And next week we talk about Electric Ladyland and also Band of Gypsies and some of his Jimi Hendrix experience time and, you know, the untimely demise of Jimi Hendrix and what he would have been doing. So if you're interested in that or guitar lessons, I had somebody reach out this week. Please hit me up on Instagram at Dr. D-O-C-T-O-R underscore N-O-V on Instagram.
Should I do something to pretend like I didn't hit stop as opposed to last week where I didn't hit stop?
Stop.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hola, my name is Ricardo. I am the host of the Lucha Jobbers podcast here in the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. We are a Spanish-speaking show dedicated to discussing and analyzing pro wrestling from all across the world. From AEW to CMLL, we talk about American wrestling, Japanese wrestling, and of course, Lucha Libre. If something big happened in the pro wrestling world, we will talk about it. So if you know Spanish or have a friend that knows Spanish or want to practice your Lucha Libre pronunciations, go listen to the Lucha Jobbers podcast right here in the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Nos vemos por ahí.